It's 6:05 on WSIC News Radio, and you're listening to We're Just Saying. If you'd like to be part of the show, 844-STUDIO-4. We are streaming live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, all points in between. Senator Sawyer is out this week. She is on a much-earned vacation with family at the moment. If you've been following her Twitter, you could probably see some of the things she's seeing over the pond, as it were. But do have, once again, partnering with me today, attorney extraordinaire Larry Shaheen. Counselor, how are you today?
I'm good. I love the legal disclaimer that this is not the opinion of SIC. I know it's there all the time, but I feel like it should be in bold letters when I walk into this room.
You know, it's funny. Actually, that was just added when I told them you were going to be here. So, like, generally, that's not on there. So, but thrilled to have you back. So, I mean, obviously, we're going to go into a couple of things today. We'll do, first of all, an election postmortem, if you will, Super Tuesday roundup. A lot of exciting races that happened over the course of this week, both locally as well as nationally. So we'll start off, obviously. President, obviously no surprises there. Joe Biden winning the Democratic primary, Donald Trump winning the Republican primary in the Republican gubernatorial race. No surprise there. Mark Robinson moving on to face Josh Stein coming in November. But I would love to get a little bit of your perspective. You know, polls saw sort of a bit of a late surge for Del Falwell throughout the course of the campaign. But really, Mark Robinson, you know, won handily. Were you surprised at the margin of that race? Did it end up kind of how you thought it would be?
It ended up exactly how I thought it was going to wind up. What I hate is that, you know, Bill Graham spent $5 million of his own money to come in third. That's never a fun spot.
That's never a fun spot.
No, and I mean, and we, you know, we like to acknowledge our friends on the other side of the aisle on the show. You know, just, you know, that a lot of times they provide us with a good bit of humor, and every now and again we see the contrasts. But it was very interesting to see the Republican Party choose who, in my opinion, was probably the most far right of that group. You know, whether you agree with them or not, I mean, it was immediate. It was like the day after the primary they came out with a quote from him, you know, how he wants to go back to the days when women can't vote. But it's like, man, that's not what he said. Like they're doing everything they can to make him look, because his entire quote was talking about how he wanted there to be, you know, he wanted people to fight like they did back then to go get those rights, and how Republicans were the ones fighting for those rights, and he would like to see more people return to that. So, I mean, the quote itself was much larger and more expansive than that. However, what was really interesting was that on the Democratic side, you saw Mike Morgan and Santana Dewberry in the AG, in the governor's and AG race, respectively. Democratic voters rejected their furthest left interests.
It
was very interesting to see, because Mike Morgan and Santana Dewberry were supported by, again, the most corrupt and liberal judge in this North Carolina Supreme Court, Anita Earls, and her.
We're just going in guns blazing.
We're just going start in guns now. Blazing.
And 3 minutes in.
Yeah,
here
30
it
minutes
is.
In. And then you have her person who's been appointed. Oh God. Why am I blanking on her name? She just won the primary. Who was the justice that won? The lady that's running in that primary.
If you hadn't asked me, I could have told you.
Oh, yeah.
We'll find it during the break.
Yeah. Her protege. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's white, but that's the only difference. So, I mean, you're dealing with the fact that, you know, that part of the wing was the wing that supported Mike Morgan. They supported Santana Dewberry against Jeff Jackson, who, by the way, I think it's funny because, you know, all the Democrats in the Senate caucus hated Jeff Jackson, and now they're going to be stuck with the possibility that he might be their AG.
I know.
The screaming that occurred Wake County.
But think of the TikTok videos, Larry.
Oh,
think of how
no,
great TikTok will be.
I don't want to listen anymore. Please, God, vote for Dan Bishop. But yeah, no, I mean, that was the story of the night, was how the Democrats really didn't, like, there were a couple of really tough primaries for a couple of Democrats. Michael Ray lost in the House. You saw another African-American who's a moderate in Guilford County. He won, but he had it was by like 100-something, but like it was close. And there was a lot of money spent in that races. You saw Shelley Willingham just destroy his opponent, who was a more liberal individual in his district. I mean, the Democrats really pushed back on their activists, and it seems that the Republicans aren't. And the difference is, you've got it starts at the top. So we can go back right to where we were talking about, top the ticket. Trump is empowering and supporting his furthest right base. Biden is telling his leftists, shut up, I got a win. Mm-hmm. I need you to be quiet. And I'm surprised, frankly, last night at the State of the Union that Biden didn't arrest all those Palestinian protesters that blocked the motorcade from getting to the Capitol.
Yeah.
But then arrested the father who stood up in the middle of his speech for shouting about the fact that Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan killed his son.
Well, you know, priorities.
Yeah, Gold Star families get arrested while, you know, protesters, you know, terrorist supporting protesters don't get arrested. It's absolute bull. So, I mean, it's one of those situations where the Democrats are going to portray themselves as the saviors of democracy and the people who are going to be there. But in reality, they're just telling their nuts to be quiet for 6 months to 8 months so that they can get reelected. And then the filibuster will be gone. All of the things that we've talked about, nationalization of elections, all this, it's all a farce. At least, you got to give the Republicans this, at least they're crazy, but they'll tell you the truth. They admit that they're a little bit crazy on the far right. The leftists are communists. They're socialist communists, but they want to portray themselves as, oh, we're moderate. Oh, wow, you and Haley supporter in South Charlotte or Northern Wake. Oh, we love you. We want you to vote for us. And then we're going to screw you. That's exactly how it happened.
Man, just wham. Larry, just right into it, brother. Right into it. 844 Studio 4, if you'd like to be part of the show. A lot of interesting congressional races on the Republican side that came through. Obviously, you know, we'll pick up, sorry, the first one, District 1, Laurie Buckhout actually was able to defeat Sandy Smith.
Yeah, I know. Sandy's going to have to retire a frying pan. That's such an awful thing.
It really is. I mean, you gotta love the
dude,
frying
she
pan.
She came out with an ad. And so for those of you who don't know on the show, Sandy Smith was famously arrested for beating her husband with a frying pan. And the best part was that it was used by Don Davis in his race against her 2 years ago. So Sandy, in this race, goes out and puts on social media about how she's bringing the frying pan with her to Washington. And I'm just looking at this and I'm like, okay, we're good. This is where we are.
This is where we are. The frying pan
the frying
that,
pan
beat, my
that
husband
got
with.
Beat my husband
now,
with.
Now, to be fair, if you want to appeal to the women's vote, yeah. What woman has not thought about beating the tar out of her husband with a frying
That's
pan?
That's true.
Now, to
I'm
be
certain,
fair,
I'm
I,
certain
I,
it's
I,
happened.
I am certain it has happened, yeah. At least thought about it, right? And so, I mean, and you know, because I have a strong inclination that my wife on more than one occasion has been reaching for the frying pan and thought, just this is the time.
Yeah, this is the time. We're going to do
time.
It.
Exactly.
We're going to beat them up.
This is when it's going to get real right here. But, yeah. But you know, here's what I will tell you. Republican candidates, you can say a lot about Republican candidates. They're never boring.
No.
Very few of them are boring.
Very few of them are boring. Well, we say that, but I mean, you think you go down the list of them because I mean, you've got District 1, which went the way I think that the folks, you know, most normal folks would probably want to see. Okay, this woman now can. Don Davis beat Sandy Smith last time. Yeah. Don Davis will have beaten Sandy Smith again. This is a situation where Don Davis is now in a competitive seat. And that seat may determine the majority of the United States House.
Yes, it may.
So that was a huge win for Richard Hudson and the NRCC and all those folks. But in a couple of these other races, if they were competitive, I'm not entirely sure we don't see some losses. I mean, we'll get into that in the next segment. I think the overriding message, and then we'll come back to these other congressional races. I think the overriding message that kind of got sent by the Republican primary voters was, we don't just hate the Democrats. We hate all of you former country club Bush Republicans.
Yeah.
We want you dead.
100%. You're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio. We'll be right back.
There's more We're Just Saying with North Carolina Senator Vicki Sawyer on the way from 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Now more We're Just Saying with North Carolina Senator Vicki Sawyer on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio with David and special guest Larry Shaheen. Like to be part of our show, 844 Studio 4. We are still streaming live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, LinkedIn. So Larry, moving on into one of the congressional races that really had a lot of eyes on it. You know, this is probably the race that Trump world, if you will, participated the most in, where mm-hmm. Donald Trump was probably more central than a lot of other races, was the District 6 race.
Yes.
between Addison McDowell, Mark Walker, Christian Castelli, Bo Hines. You know, there are a couple other ones in there, but really those were the ones that really stood out. Addison McDowell. Now, important to note about this race, no one got over 30%. Addison McDowell did finish with about 26% of the vote. Mark Walker second with about 24%. And then Christian Castelli with 21%. So getting into this race, obviously, there will likely be a runoff.
There will be a runoff.
So I did. That's what I was getting ready to ask you is a runoff have for the second place person, does a runoff, is it automatic?
It's not automatic. It has to be requested.
But it has to be requested.
It has to be requested. Walker's going to request it. So that's not an issue. So what you'll see here, so let's talk about how we got to this result, and then let's talk about what the next steps are going to be. How we got to this result is Ted Budd's team essentially adopted Addison McDowell. You had Michael Luthy and you had Jonathan Feltz, who both worked for Senator Budd, both get on board with Addison McDowell. Then you had Addison immediately come out the gate with a Trump endorsement, literally the minute he announced. So from that standpoint, Addison's floor, or you know, was between 25 and 30. So there was no chance Addison wasn't going to get at least 25-30%. So that's the Trump floor. That's the I get you 30% of the nuts. That's what's going to happen. So you get those. You got to go get the rest. So it was interesting because the really interesting thing is Mark Walker, who in my one of the most ineffective members of Congress. The man would lie to his own mother. He literally is one of those people that just, you look him in the face, he's going to say whatever he needs to say to you to get you to do what he wants. He's going to run around and go tell everybody
How many endorsements did he announce he had that subsequently had to come back?
He announced that he had all these endorsements and they were all like, wait, what?
That news to me.
No, I'm going to tell you, that's going to be interesting to see how that turns out because Christian Castelli's already endorsed Addison. I think you're going to see Bo Hines probably endorse Addison. I think you're going to see the entire political environment of the state go again. And the funny thing is that this is in many ways a redo of 2014. Because if those who remember and have the memory long enough to remember 2014, Walker was in a runoff against Phil Berger Jr. at that time. But the issue there was that Phil Berger Jr. had upset several of the sheriffs and district attorneys and was unable to compete with Walker. And Walker, you know, the old adage was you don't attack a pastor in his hometown. All of his churchgoers are going to come out and support him. In this specific instance, Addison doesn't have to attack Walker.
Right.
All Addison has to say is, I'm the Trump candidate. This is who President Trump wants you to support. And unfortunately, there's a couple of folks who were troublemakers in Guilford County who were donors who decide for some reason that they like Mark Walker. And I think they need to disabuse themselves of that notion because I'm going to tell you right now, nobody's going to get shoved to the back of the bench as quick as Mark Walker will in a Trump presidency. And he's going to be absolutely useless for that district. So I think you're going to see Addison hopefully come through on that primary. If people are looking for someone good to support, I would support Addison McDowell in that specific primary.
Were you surprised at Bo Hines' result?
No, that same result has echoed through multiple races now. You saw that same result happen to John Bradford, which we'll get to in the eighth. Moving around doesn't work. And I think that being the candidate who's not from there opens you up to lines of attack that ultimately don't work. And in some of these suburban rural, and I mean that, like these rural counties, like Davidson County, Guilford County, not Guilford, Davidson County, Union County, Randolph County, Catawba County, Lincoln County, I think to a certain extent we can say, you know, maybe Yancey County. You're not from there. You don't look like you're from there. I ain't gonna vote for you.
Yeah.
And I think we saw that, unfortunately, in the 8th district, and we saw it kind of in the 6th, that Hines just didn't fit the district and his result. Plus, he didn't have Club for Growth coming out and supporting him. Club for Growth's mission in that specific instance was to kill Walker, and boy, did they do that.
Yes, they did.
Good job, Jim. That's a great job for Jim Blaine and Ray Martin on that one. Thank God.
How do you see the runoff between Walker and Addison shaping up? I mean, I really feel like Addison will win.
He's going to need money. Yes. So I think I encourage everybody who's listening and everybody who's got $0.02 to rub together. Max is $3,300. Give it to him. You know, if you've got more than that, please give it to Club for Growth. I mean, it's going to be one of those situations where North Carolina needs Addison McDowell. So I think it is absolutely in my mind one of the most important races in the runoff.
And just for perspective, Addison is a great guy.
He's a great guy.
He will be a great congressman.
He will be a wonderful congressman.
Speaking of the eighth, talk about, you know, I guess political comeback of the century.
Well, I mean, Mark
Harris came through that with right at a little over 30% of the vote. So there's no runoff there. Alan Baucom with 27%. John Bradford coming in third with about around 18% of the vote. So, I mean, talk about I mean, I don't even know what you call this. The fact that, you know, Mark Harris won, obviously, a seat a couple of years ago and then withdrew or resigned before ever being put into it because of all the county, scandal around what happened in Bladen County and the vote harvesting that took place down there.
That's the same thing with Trump. It's the same thing with Trump. 30%, that's your floor, right?
Yep.
Or that's your ceiling. Like, I think Trump probably is doing much better, but I think Trump would have had a 30 to 45% ceiling in North Carolina if there'd been competitive races against him. But Mark Harris still has people who, despite the, you know, don't trust what I'm doing. Don't trust your eyes. You know, listen to me so I can lie to you more. That's what Mark Harris does. So, I mean, to a certain extent, you know, we now have a criminal that's going to Congress from North Carolina, which is just absolutely out of this world. And the voters of that district missed out on two fantastic individuals. Alan Baucom is a native son of Union County. He's a farmer. He's an ag guy. That would have been a wonderful choice. But absent just him, John Bradford is a great entrepreneur, somebody who has done great things for Mecklenburg County. And for some reason, the people of Mecklenburg County stupidly decided, oh, let's get the pastor who we know has said on the record that he's done bad things and has to get a call. And now he's out there lying to people that, oh, my God, the election was stolen from me. No, it wasn't. You paid someone to go collect ballots. You're a ballot harvester. That's what you are. And we just sent a ballot harvester to Congress. So, I mean, it's
how competitive will that district be in November?
Well, that's the consequence. Let's move forward now. I'm of the opinion that with Trump and Robinson and Harris on the top of the ticket for that district, all of Cabarrus County is now in play.
Really?
All of it. All of Union County is now in play. All of it. The districts that border Mecklenburg County, I think that you're going to see Brian Echeverria possibly lose because of the fact that they now have a real possibility of running against a couple of nuts on the top. So you're dealing with the fact that you want to talk about electoral consequences. Cabarrus County was one of the closest suburban counties in North Carolina in 2020. Watch it flip.
Really?
Watch it flip.
Wow.
Because you're dealing with legitimate crazy people. You're telling me that Cabarrus County, and then I'm going to jump down. You're going to tell me that a guy like Kevin Crutchfield, who is the House member, and for those of you who don't know, Kevin Crutchfield was the House member for Cabarrus County, done nothing wrong. Literally nothing. Brian Echeverria runs. Brian Echeverria is bankrupt, has all kinds of problems, lost the last race he ran after people invested over $1 million in. But we're going to throw him out to give this guy, who has already proven he's a loser, another chance? That's nothing but an indictment on the voters and their need to feel like they're voting for the person who makes them feel good.
You know, and it's interesting that you say that because multiple races across the Republican primary were like that, where you had an established existing legislator who had a record, who, you know, Bradford has a record, you know, like you said, Crutchfield has a record, Gray Mills here, staunchly conservative record. Mm-hmm. You can find nothing wrong with their votes,
that's right,
their record, or that's anything right like that. Proven legislators, successful legislators, who lost their races to non-legislators. Yep. How big of a factor do you think that is now? Do you think it's just, if you're a legislator and you get in some of these districts the way they're drawn, that it's just, hey, you know, we're just anti-incumbent across the board?
No, I don't
regardless?
Think it's that. I think to a certain extent you have to adopt the Patrick McHenry model, and we can talk about this very quickly and then move to the 10th. Patrick McHenry was able to survive, and you got to give a lot of credit to his team. You know, Brett Keeter, Will Bowen, and before that, Eduardo Andrade, who then went to work for Pat Harrigan, in addition to the congressman. Mm-hmm. Let's be clear. Patrick McHenry won his race based on grassroots. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the ultimate grassroots candidate. Every year, regardless of whether he knew he had a competitive primary, he would hire kids, and they would walk doors. Every year, they would walk doors and make calls. He took positions that were tough, mm-hmm. voted for tough stuff, still won with 50 to 60% of the primary ballot every time. Why? Because he knew that to make sure you're insulated, you have to do the work ahead of time. Mm-hmm. You can't just say, all right, it's December, let's file, let's go. No, you got to do it all the time. And I am going to push back on my consultant class buddies and those of us who work in campaigns, and I'm going to say, if you don't have a grassroots budget, you're missing the boat. If you're not showing up to these things, you're missing the boat. You got to talk to these people. They need to hear from you. And to a certain extent, there's a level of disrespect that I think these voters feel like they're getting from a lot of the establishment candidates. And I think that's what's driving a lot of it. But that's not the case in the 10th. So let's move to the 10th. Rayville's lost because two crazy people from Iredell County decided to run and didn't want to help consolidate the vote for Gray. That's why Gray lost. Pat Harrigan, nothing negative to say about Pat. Pat's a fine guy, going to do a decent job, I think, as a congressman. But that still doesn't mean that the way he won, didn't win 50% of the vote. Mm-mm. He won 41%. There was about, what, 7, 8% that went to the other two?
16%. 16% of Iredell County went to the other two.
So,
who again, never had a chance.
Never had a chance. Never once had a chance. They should have voted for Gray, right? Because now Iredell County is going to miss out on having one of their own, again, missed out on having one of their own go
once,
to Congress.
Once again, the biggest county.
The biggest county
in the district. Can't send one of their own to Congress.
Can't send one of their own to Congress. And well, you know what? And that's and Gray should be, Gray and his team should be congratulated. They did everything right. But it was always going to be tough in that shorter race. But it's just, it's sad to see two people whose only role was to play spoiler, because that's what they were.
Well, and to be fair with you, they say the constants are death and taxes.
Yeah.
I say they're death and taxes and the Iredell County Republican Party screwing itself.
Those
are the constants inside of ours. And you know, get mad at me for saying it. I have been inside the Iredell County Republican for a number of years. I've been on the executive board. I've been 10th district vice chairman.
Right.
I have been ingrained in this, and it is a constant that the Iredell County Republican Party will always screw itself.
Yes, that's right.
Always. Yes, you're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio. We'll be right back.
With more of NC Senator Vicki Sawyer, and We're Just Saying after this short break on 105.9 100.7 WSIC. Now back to We're Just Saying with North Carolina Senator Vicki Sawyer on 105.9 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio with David and guest host Larry Shaheen. If you'd like to be part of the show, 844-STUDIO-4. We are still streaming live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, LinkedIn. So, Larry, we were going in down to District 13 congressional race. That saw nobody. Also, this is going to a runoff between Kelly Daughtry and Brad Knott. I think it was 15 people in that race.
Yeah.
So, obviously, it was going to be a long shot that anyone got to 30. Kelly Daughtry came close with right at about a little over 27% of the vote, but that is going to go to a runoff.
Yep.
How do you see that one shaking out?
Two very wealthy people. Kelly Daughtry, between last time she ran and this time, has spent well over $5 million of her own money. And that's Leo's money. I mean, her and Leo's money. Leo's involved in this one. Those who don't know, former representative and Board of Governors member Leo Daughtry is one of the people who is helping fund that race. And then you got Brad Knott, who's from the very, very wealthy and prominent Knott family in Raleigh. He's actually, you know what's funny about him? He's a quad. He's
really?
One. He's one of quadruplets.
Oh, wow.
And his brother is the Tucker. Is the chief of staff to Bud.
Wow.
Yeah, and because Brad is a former Brad's a former U.S. attorney. Now, here's the interesting part. Kelly Daughtry has a very bad history of giving to Democrats. Brad Knott also admitted that he may have voted in some elections in from a house that he didn't live in. So, we're going to see some silliness in the 13th district. And I can't make any predictions because I'm going to tell you right now, Trump may pick.
Yeah.
Trump may pick, and then that may be the end of it. But ultimately, you're going
to
see.
Well, then to be fair to Brad, you know, I mean, those laws are more like guidelines.
They're more like guidelines
as opposed to actual rules, right?
See, that's the unfortunate part. That one specific rule is a law, and I'm not sure that that's going to be. And the thing is, it wouldn't. I mean, I could see
laws
people say,
don't mean what they used to. Larry, come on, as an attorney, you know that.
I know. No, but the problem is that he, as a former U.S. attorney, I think that was a. That was an unforced error that may wind up being a really, 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 really big deal.
Absolutely. And so, from a local race standpoint, a lot of North Carolina, you know, every North Carolina House seat was on. There were a few that were.
Well, the Council of State was more. There were two results.
Yes, Council of State.
There were two results in the Council of State. I mean, you got a runoff for Lieutenant Governor. Cool. Hal Weatherman and Jim O'Neill. Totally makes sense.
You weren't surprised Deanna Ballard on that one?
No. No, Jim O'Neill has run multiple times statewide.
Yeah,
that's that alone is the reason why he's in that runoff.
Yeah,
he's run for AG twice. Everybody, you've heard that name.
Yeah.
So I mean, to a certain extent, there's I voted for him for AG, I'm voting for him for LG. I mean, that's what happened there. And the issue with the Council of State is to run statewide, you need a minimum of about $2.5 million to be able to even have an impact. Absent that, you're going to get some crazy results.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Jack Clark for auditor spent $3,000. He's in a runoff with Dave Bullock, who spent almost $500,000. I mean, it's just wild, right? Like, it's like, oh my God, no one, he didn't spend anything. He didn't do anything. He didn't go anywhere.
Well, what it shows with these races with a bunch of people stuff. That no one knows.
Who knows?
No one knows.
So that's going to be an interesting runoff. But then the two fun results that I think are really going to be more impactful for everybody. Brad Briner, who won treasurer, is going to be a great treasurer. Mm-hmm. He's going to do a great job. We need him to beat Wes Harris, who is a failed PhD economist from UNC, from Charlotte, who I cannot imagine him in charge of the treasurer's office. And I can think of no one who I would want less in charge of managing the state's pension than him. But in terms of superintendent of public instruction, you know what that is? That is pure running around grassroots. Mm-hmm. Who's gonna go? And Kathy Truitt, career educator, very qualified, nothing wrong with her really, right? I mean, there was some, but you saw Michelle Morrow and her supporters, who are wild.
Yeah.
Like a rabid pack of wolves, that bunch.
Well, and to be fair, she said some horrible things about Catherine Truitt
yes.
that were not true.
That were not true.
That were beyond the pale.
Yeah.
That, you know, we discussed it here on the show, you know, a couple of weeks ago when Vicky was here talking about that, really beyond the pale and really just completely out of line.
But again, that shows that, you know, people like to say that X is not real life or Twitter is not mm-hmm. real life. And in this specific instance, it turned out to be. And I mean there's
well,
certain.
You get them angry enough.
Well, you get them angry enough. And that's the thing, right? Here's the problem is that Michelle Morrow was running around the state, going around all these meetings, going around all these people. The problem is if in the absence of the ability to really move the needle, in the absence of the ability to spend $2.5 million in a council of state race, you replace it. It has to be replaced with other things. So people are going to call around. Well, if all the people who know Republicans, then all the Republicans are hearing from this woman and she's winning all these straw polls and there's all this stuff, that should signal a problem. So I think and Kathy Truitt, just this is going to be an issue for elected officials. You can't just be a good administrator. You got to get your butt out in the world and you got to go out there and you got to be with the people. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are in a populist moment. That means that you can either fight it and lose or you can accept it and win.
Mm-hmm.
Get your butt out your seat and go talk to people.
Yep.
Get your butt out your seat, go out there and fight. Brad Briner did a great job of that. Brad Briner had the same exact amount of nonsense that came against him. But Brad Briner was a relatively capable and experienced person, and he showed up to debates and had a very good, positive discussion. So, I mean, that's the difference between what happened with Kathy Truitt and what happened with Michelle Morrow. Now, moving down the list, you had some really good wins, I think. You know, the Senate had some good, you know, some interesting wins. You had Bob Brunson in the one open seat that Jim Perry is vacating. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a fantastic candidate. Scott Lassiter won,
mm-hmm.
Basically taking that Senate seat off the table, which I think is good. It focuses people in on it. You know, here in Charlotte, you saw two people fight real hard for a Senate district seat that was effectively unwinnable, and they spent a collective $400,000 to win a seat in a primary. One of them sued the other. They got really nasty. It's going to divide the party. And it was really unnecessary. Mark Hollow won a Senate district. You've got some other Democrats. This is the one. This is the one on the Democratic side where they went nuts. Mike Woodard lost.
Really?
Mike Woodard lost. Mike Woodard is not coming back to the Senate from Durham.
Wow.
He was a moderate Democrat. He lost. He ran for mayor and lost. Ran for Senate and lost. Mike Woodard, one of the literal good people in the Senate, lost.
Wow.
It's just wild. And then he moved to the House where a junior at ECU beats George Cleveland.
Crazy.
Can you believe that?
Crazy.
Can you believe that? That a guy who on his Facebook, on his website, talks about nothing but federal issues, beats an experienced and seasoned legislature like George Cleveland.
Yeah. What was it a few years back where the trucker who that was in New Jersey, the trucker who ran against the New Jersey Speaker of the House.
Oh, yeah, and won.
Spent virtually nothing.
With the President Pro Tem and won.
Yeah, and won.
Yeah. I hate to say this, but this is the part where I'm gonna bemoan my own community. People inside urban centers, they don't leave.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go out. They don't go and see. And the complaints I always hear are, we don't want to deal with the crazy people and all this. Well, let me make this really, really clear. Not showing up cedes leadership to them. If you don't show up at the precinct meetings, if you don't show up at the district meetings, if you don't show up at the conventions, if you don't get involved, you're right. The people who do not understand the real consequences of where we're going to wind up are controlling what's happening. So my contention is, I need you to put on your big boy and big girl pants. I need you to find 12 to 15 of your buddies. I need you to look them in the face and say, this is important for our country and our community. Get your butt to a party meeting and start injecting some common sense. We need more people, because the problem we're having is not that we don't have, you know, the right people. It's that there used to be a lot of good people involved in party politics on both sides of the aisle who are now prevented of doing so by the DEI policies that go on within their businesses. And they're not allowed to run for office. They're not allowed to get involved. They're discouraged to get to. And they say, oh, I don't want to deal with it. If not you, then who? And to a certain extent, if you cede control of these things, you are going to give people with unrighteous motives and a desire to bring themselves and their own selfish interests into. Mark Harris is a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. Mark Harris has no business representing the state in Congress, yet he probably might. It is an absolute travesty that we've got a situation now where we see this degradation of common sense on both sides. And I say this to everybody. This feels to me a lot like 1968, mm-hmm. right? You think about how angry the country was. You think about how people were mad. There's going to be riots at the Democratic Convention in Chicago over Palestine, right? We are going to have a lot of people coming against the Republicans because of positions that we have taken, and a lot of suburbanites who are going to be now inundated in North Carolina with anti-Trump, anti-Robinson. You know, if it's Hal Weatherman who wins, Hal Weatherman has said some goofy stuff. So Hal Weatherman's going to have some really fun things if he wins that primary. That's the top of our ticket. Yeah. And then in certain places, you're going to have like Mark Harris. And
well, I think the frustrating thing for me is that in a lot of these parties, we demand a purity test.
Yeah.
And if you have one thing that is not in line with, you know, the extreme end of your party, then you're a rhino.
You're a rhino.
And the problem is that what that gets you then is people who are strictly ideological in their point yep. of view. And that puts them into situations, and we nominate them and we put them on ballots and they do not win. We lose these things to Democrats. And then people step back. How did we get here? Because you continually put through your primaries people who are objectively unelectable
yes.
to a general yes. populace.
Yeah.
And you continue to do that and then wonder how things got into the
crapper. That's exactly right.
You're listening to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay with us. We'll have more of We're Just Saying with NC Senator Vicki Sawyer after this short break on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC. Call now to speak with NC Senator Vicki Sawyer at 844-STUDIO-4. It's We're Just Saying on 105.9, 100.7 WSIC.
Welcome back to We're Just Saying on WSIC News Radio with David and guest host Larry Shaheen. Like to be part of the show, 844-STUDIO-4. We're finishing out live on the WSIC News website, YouTube, Facebook, X, LinkedIn, clearing out some of the local races before our primary Super Tuesday before we venture into the general election. Representative Jeff McNeely in the northern part mm-hmm. of Iredell County won his seat, fending off a challenge from John Galena. Race, honestly, a little almost 12% of the win.
vote for Jeff.
That was a good win for Jeff. Thought it might be a little bit closer, but I mean, Jeff really worked hard, spent a lot of time knocking doors and things like that. So he will be going. And honestly, you know, to be fair, with, you know, Gray Mills exiting his seat, Todd Carver, of course, won that primary and will obviously be the representative for us. But having, you know, having two brand new representatives down there for Iredell County would have, you know, would have put us, you know, even, you know, regardless of the quality, right?
That would have been bad for us.
But having a seasoned member going back there with some seniority, some chairmanships and things like that, good for Iredell County. All three county commissioners, incumbents won, which, you know, continues. I think it's been 36 years since an incumbent lost in Iredell County.
Incumbents don't tend to lose in Iredell County.
They don't tend to lose in it. Once they're in, they're typically in for a while. And then finally, the ballot referendum for Iredell County taking all the commissioner terms to 4 years passed, which I actually like. You know, the staggered 4 year terms, I think, is a much more efficient way to do things here in the county. But moving into sort of the general election, sort of what do you see, you know, from a presidential standpoint? You know, obviously my theory and my contention still is that Joe Biden will be replaced at the convention. I do not feel like that he will, especially.
I don't know, though, after that. State of the Union. I don't know that. I mean, I think that.
But is that enough for people to look at? I mean, he gave up and gave an hour speech. You know, they pumped him full of enough adrenaline and whatever else to, you know, get him to stagger up there and not trip and, you know, not slur too many of his words. I mean, is that enough to get voters?
I don't know. But again, here is where it's going to be interesting, because if they were to replace him at the convention, it would have to be. He would have to willingly go.
Well, that's
I don't think he goes. I think we wind up with the exact same two we got. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, here's why I don't think the Democrats are going to replace him. He is pro-Israel. Mm-hmm. Anyone they replace is going to have to be pro-Palestine. Anyone who's pro-Palestine loses a general election.
But you don't think they could replace... See, my theory has been a Michelle Obama. Think they could replace with somebody who's generically acceptable and doesn't really have to take a whole
Michelle
lot of positions?
Michelle Obama's not really general. And I'm going to tell you, if they do that without running a primary, that's a gift to Donald Trump.
Think so?
Oh, it's a gift. You know why? It's a gift because he gets to say, these people say that democracy's in danger. An unelected elite just replaced a presidential candidate. How do you, the people, feel about that? I mean, that's
a strong argument.
Well, that's where I would say, are you serious? I ran a primary. Like, if I was President Trump, I'd be like, I'm sorry. I just ran a primary and beat everybody off. I even told the party not to do what they just did. But the Democrats at Chicago are going to sit there.
In Chicago, of all places.
Of all places are going to replace it? No. So here's what's going to happen. Everyone's going to hate the next 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to hate him. It's going to be awful. I don't think anyone's going to have any fun. The only people who are going to make money on this are the consultants.
And the TV stations.
And the TV stations, which, again, reminds me again that I need to go buy a TV station. Jesus.
But, I'm not sure you can make it through the FCC, brother. You're on a list somewhere.
I am on a list somewhere, I'm certain. But no, I mean, like no one benefits from what's about to happen. Mm-hmm. Not one person's going to benefit. And I often question myself, and I say, okay, you know, I don't think, I must be outside the norm, or I must be. But when I walk, it's so funny because I walk into a room of normal business people, don't really pay attention. And their response to me when I tell them, yeah, I'm involved in politics a little bit, because, you know, I have to say a little bit, because if they're aware of how big the dorkness is, they're not going to talk to me. So like when you talk to me, like, yeah, I'm involved a little bit. Well, this is what I think, and I hate both of these people, and I don't understand how we wound up here. And it's like, God, the normal person just hates this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's going to be a turnout battle, but I think there's going to be, like, getting the far, far right and the far, far left, like, it's going to be a different fight. The Republicans are not going to have a problem turning out their base.
Mm-hmm.
They've got their base candidate.
Yep.
It's going to be getting the moderates to vote for them. Democrats aren't going to have a problem getting moderates to vote for them. The issue now is going to be what happens to their base. You look at Michigan, and again, the 88,000 uncommitted votes in North Carolina, that's a throwaway. That's nothing. Mm-hmm. 2012, there were far more throwaway votes for Barack Obama than there were for Biden. So that's BS. That argument makes no sense. The question that Biden is going to have to face, and the question that the Democrats are going to have to face, is it's going to be among Muslim Americans. It's going to be among Palestine supporters. And the response that they're going to, this is kind of, I'm simplifying it, but this is kind of the discussion. It's going to be, you want me or you want the guy who's actively said he wants to throw you out of the country? Pick. Because with all due respect to you, Muslim American, you don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. Your choice is me. I get you don't like where I am on this issue, but your choice is me. You protest, you're going to give it to Trump. And if I'm Donald Trump, I think there needs to be some form of, if they were smart, they would take advantage of that. They would run some form of independent expenditure. They would do something that encourages African-Americans and Muslim Americans to sit the election out. Mm-hmm. Because the only way Biden wins is he turns out his base and he pulls moderates. If he just pulls moderates, he loses. And if the base doesn't show up, he loses. Mm-hmm. So especially with the margins as thin as they were the last time, because he's going to lose Arizona. Immigration is going to flip that state. Texas is going to be a swing state. Georgia is going to be a swing state. But Georgia, I think, with Lake and Riley, is not going to be for Biden this year. So what's his only path to victory? Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those three states, you've got the senator for John Fetterman out there stumping for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
In Michigan, you've got all the Muslims that live in Dearborn. Trust me, I'm Arab. I am not Muslim, but I am Arab, and I know the legitimate density of those folks in that part of the world. There's a good chance Biden loses Michigan just on that issue alone, and that comes down to Wisconsin. So if you're telling me Arizona's off the board for immigration, North Carolina's off the board, because I think North Carolina, there's too many rural voters, and it'll be close, but there's too many rural voters and there's too many people who just don't. This state is not really swing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Georgia, I think, goes off the table just because Brian Kemp, no one talks well enough about Brian Kemp. Brian Kemp is just a monster.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to win that state because he wants to win that state.
Yep.
And I'm going to be real interested. That if there's something that the side note that I'd love to see, I want to see the conversation between Kemp and Trump about the general. I want to see how that little conversation goes. That's going to be really interesting.
It'll be very interesting.
It's going to be really interesting. But when it comes right down to it, local won't matter. Who's on the ballot won't matter. This is going to be a pure, cathartic, party-based, straight ballot election.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be, the question's going to be, can you turn out your base? And can you peel off enough of those moderates to be able to win? Because the strategies are different.
So how does this filter into Mark Robinson versus Josh Stein? Because, I mean, historically, North Carolina, I mean, we will go Republican for a president and Democrat for
Stein
a governor.
Stein will have enough money to make the differentiation. Mark Robinson needs to take the hardest middle turn any person has ever made. If I'm Mark Robinson, I'm on social media every day. I'm on social media every day saying that what they're saying is not true. If I'm Mark Robinson, my entire goal is to make the suburban mom know Josh Stein is the party of the education establishment who has failed our children. He would keep your schools closed. He would keep your state closed. We can't have that. And oh, by the way, he is the party of defund the police and make our cities less safe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that message has to start now.
But to be fair, that's one of the things that there are candidates where that tact can work, right?
It could work for him. It can work for him.
But that's the thing about it. Josh Stein, same as Roy Cooper, is not an overly ambitious.
No, he's never been competitive. Yeah, like all of his races have been very tight. And that's where I think, again, I'm going to be very interested to see how Mark Robinson is a say what you will about him in all other areas. The man has an immense amount of charisma, and
yes,
he is fantastic on the mic.
Yes.
Put him on video and let him speak to the people over and over and over and over.
But
and
to be
over.
Fair, in a very highly coordinated and structured
highly coordinated
fashion.
And stricted fashion.
Yeah. If it's off the cuff, yeah, that's not
that's
good.
Exactly. No, that's it can't good. Be off the cuff. And that the off-the-cuff speeches need to end. Mm-hmm. If he gives another off the cuff speech anywhere in this state for the next 8 months, his consulting team needs to be taken out back and beaten with a rubber hose. There is no reason whatsoever for him to say anything unscripted.
Yeah.
Period.
And I will also say this, and I say this as a you know, person of faith, as a Baptist, and like that, stay out of the pulpits. don't go into them.
That's right.
I mean, I structurally have a problem with any politician going into a pulpit and speaking. I don't like it. I've never liked it. I don't care if they're Republican. I don't care if they're Democrat. It is a pandering move to people of faith. You have no business in that. Yes. If you want to talk to people of faith, do it outside the church and invite them in. The church is the place to come and get spiritually nurtured and fed. Right. It is not for you to come in and talk about your candidacy for office. And that is true for me. It has always been true for me. But where he has found his most, and we are in a state right now and you know, locally and of course as a country, where people fundamentally don't understand people of faith.
Yeah.
And you can say something that is perfectly in line with faith and perfectly okay, and it will get taken and run to the nth degree. So stay out of that. And I think if he's disciplined and structured the way you talk about, you know, that is a race.
No, he can win. Not only can he win, he can help protect those incumbents in vulnerable areas that Trump's going to create vulnerability. Cabarrus, Johnston, Union, Gaston, Iredell to a certain extent. Some of these places have started to turn. Don't think that Melinda Bales, who's going to be one of the most competitive seats in North Carolina and North Mecklenburg, that is the beating heart of the majority, the supermajority North Carolina House. It's going to run through 98. It's going to run through 103 down there with Trish Cotham.
Mm-hmm.
So Mark Robinson needs to take responsibility for the fact that he is going to be top of the ticket. And if he doesn't find a way to insulate himself and protect the people down the ballot from him and the things he said, there's going to be a real problem.
True story. Larry Sheen, thanks. It felt fantastic having you here. As always, enjoyed it. Everyone have a great weekend. Vicky will be back next week.
Serving you better than ever before. 105.9 100.7 WSIC, Statesville, Mooresville, North Charlotte.